Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. When I look to the sky, something tells me you're here with me, and you make everything.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Dr. Anna Maria Hemingway, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Fran. And, you know, there's a story yesterday. I don't know if anybody saw it. I actually read it on Yahoo, and it was about a family. Actually, it was about a 17-year-old soccer star in high school. And he lives in Hawaii, a very close relationship with his mother. And he was playing the championship game, and his mother was in the stands. And there was a commotion in the stands, and, of course, he was in the middle of the game, and he didn't notice. And it turns out that his mother, who more than anything in the world wanted to see him, you know, win this championship, collapsed and actually had a stroke. And they knew that she was seriously ill, and they decided not to tell him as he was in the middle of the game. And she passed away, and then before she passed away, she said to those around her, she smiled, and she said that she wanted to watch her son, you know, win the championship. And a couple of days later, he obviously was very distraught, and some of this boy's, you know, friends took him out, and they went bowling, and then they got back in the car, and his friends looked, and flying, hovering right above his head was a black moth. But then they proceeded to tell him that, or remind him that there is a great myth in Hawaiian culture that a loved one will watch over you, and by manifesting or turning into a moth, and he repeated that, you know, at the funeral, and then he had great comfort in that. So I guess the question that I would pose to you, Fran, is that, to you, is we often hear of these things, you know, we hear of butterflies, you know, moths or birds or things appearing at the right moment shortly after somebody dies. So when I look at it, there's several different possibilities. One, it could be a case where the loved one that passes over comes back immediately in the form of a butterfly or a moth, or two, that this now deceased person is able to manifest a butterfly, make a butterfly appear, or in this case a moth appear to watch over, or the deceased person is able to coerce an existing, you know, moth to enter the car and fly over. So which do you believe?
Or just coincidentally there happens to be a moth.
I left that one out, didn't I?
And that would have been the one I would have expected you to have put first.
Right. Well, I certainly am open to that, you know, as well. But the timing of when you hear things and everything else fits together, the her dying, you know, wish was to watch over her son, and there is that culture that myth that I was unaware of. So it gives a little bit more credence to that.
Well, you know, when I listen to you tell this story, it brings to mind a special bereavement walk that we had participated in many, many years ago, and it was on a boardwalk in the sand, not a place where monarch butterflies kind of hang out. They're kind of like bushes and greenery and stuff like that. And as people began to congregate to do this bereavement walk, so did the monarch butterflies, until there were so many there. And that's what comes to mind when you start to talk about this moth. What's interesting, though, is that here in the United States, Hawaii is part of the United States, but here on the mainland of the United States, we don't have that mythological story about the black moth. But we do believe in monarch butterflies, or people who have had bereavement experiences believe in the butterflies coming. So I think it's interesting that there, the manifestation of the butterfly is a black moth. Here, we wouldn't recognize the black moth. It has to be a monarch butterfly. So now, going back on your choices, I say that the deceased soul, well, the deceased person, the living soul, is manifesting that which it knows will be familiar to us and will associate their visiting us with that particular symbol.
So, but how did this symbol manifest? I mean,
we can try and explain it up, down, here, there, and all over, and I keep going back to the same thing, and I just keep going back to it, is that we live in a physical world that science, or mainstream science, has tried to put into a neat little box and says, if this happens, then that will happen, this whole linear cause and effect stuff. In the non-physical world, these rules don't exist. So you want me to explain it to you or explain it to the listeners or give my opinion based on the physical world, which I'm continually telling everybody cannot be done.
Yeah, I'm not expecting you to give me a scientific explanation of it.
I'm not looking to give you a scientific explanation.
My question was broad. I mean, first of all, the question is, do you think that a person in the physical reincarnates as a butterfly or as a non-mammal, you know?
No.
You don't? Okay, all right, well, that's...
There's my answer,
We've just eliminated one.
Okay.
Put that X next to it. Do you think that, we know that people in spirit can influence matter. We've seen
people,
the evidence.
And we also know people in the physical can influence matter. We've seen that evidence.
Correct, because consciousness is consciousness, whether
right.
you have a body or not.
Right.
So when I look at things like that, I think that somehow, in terms that we don't understand, spirit is able to communicate, you know, with not only other human beings, but with other species, and sort of... put a imprint into their minds or their consciousness to do certain things, such as enter that car. Just like we don't know where thoughts come into our head.
Right, and I just want to take it one little itty-bitty step further. If you look at how the mediums take in information from the non-physical world, you know, they want to give it all these fancy Claire names and all these crazy names, but what's actually happening is the spirit world is, again, imprinting on them the same way they would imprint on a TV set using EVP or on a tape recorder using EVP. They imprint upon their consciousness, their being, the image that they want them to see. Either they're seeing it in their third eye, or they can probably even manifest something to come into the physical. And we've seen it with where a medium is, say, they smell something or they taste something. But it's not taste like you and I taste it in our mouth, but it is a sensation that comes through as if you had tasted it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you.
And so it's the same thing, this visual thing of them manifesting all of these monarch butterflies or manifesting the one black moth. They're in control, and they're making it happen to communicate with you.
And the easiest way I think that the people in spirit can communicate is by, you know, thought imprint or transference or entanglement or whatever you want to call it. And people readily they just dismiss it, but thoughts are always popping into people's heads, and automatically they say, well, that's called imagination, and we all have imagination, but is it really imagination? We don't know.
Call it what you want.
Well, we're going to go to a break, and we come back and have a very interesting guest, Dr. Anna Maria Hemingway, who wrote a book called Immortal Yearning. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Anna Maria Hemingway. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
And Dr. Anna Maria Hemingway is a writer and researcher of spiritual traditions, ancient rites and rituals, mystical states of consciousness, and universal cultural mythology surrounding death and dying. She believes that archetypes and symbols often manifest themselves through dreams, waking visions, bodily sensations, creative arts, encounters in nature, and synchronistic events. She's the author of several books. Some of her prior books are Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Myths of an Afterlife. Her latest book is called Immortal Yearnings, Mystical Imaginings and Primordial Affirmations of the Afterlife. It's an exploration of mystical states of consciousness and reveals the constant recurring patterns of death and rebirth. Her website is her name, Anna Maria Hemingway.com, and it's Anna with two N's and Hemingway with one M. And welcome, Anna Maria.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Nice to speak with you again. I read the book. I enjoyed it very much. You know, when we get into, I mentioned the term altered states of consciousness, and a lot of people, when they hear the term altered, immediately they think in terms of, you know, either a mind-altering drug or a stage of mind, state of mind that's only available to ancient mystics. But isn't it true that we can all reach such states of awareness?
Yes, and I'd clarify that by saying perhaps it's more just an expanded awareness. You know, when we clear our minds of all the clutter, and sometimes something very simple can be the focus of that. For example, you know, being out in nature, suddenly becoming riveted to what's actually happening in nature around you allows this new awareness to filter through. So I don't think it's reserved for mystics at all. I think probably, you know, they spend most of their lifetimes creating that state, or perhaps, you know, living in that state far more. But certainly I think that most people in their lifetime experience a more expanded awareness, or we term that an altered state, because it's very different to our day-to-day consciousness when those things can, you know, not register, because we're totally immersed or involved in something else.
So when people dream and reach describe these other realms, I mean, that's a form of expanded consciousness or an altered state, right? And so, I mean, dreaming, you would say, is one way for us to reach this expanded awareness or leaving the physical body?
Definitely, because, again, you know, we're asleep. And so these images, and sometimes, you know, quite startling insights can, again, you know, manifest into our consciousness because we're not resisting it consciously.
I know you're certainly an expert with all the research and writing you've done, you know, with myth and archetypal information. And I know you've even described a near-death experience, which you know a lot about, it as a mystical vision. I think you said it's a mystical vision with mythic motifs and archetypal dimensions. So not knowing much about myth or archetypes, if I hear that description, I might interpret a near-death experience as more dreamlike, you know, because it's mystical or it's mythic, than being so-called real. So maybe at this point, tell us a little bit more about myths and archetypes.
Well, I think one of the misapprehensions people have is that they tend to think of myth as being a story that's made up, you know, an unbelievable story. Whereas if you study myth, I think you soon come to the conclusion that what myths are, you can call them custodians, if you like, of ancient knowledge that has been formatted in stories and passed down the generations, keeping particular potent points in each of those variations. So, for example, a myth a resurrection myth in whatever form it may come out of, and it may, you know, evolve into as a story, is actually telling you a central point, which is death and rebirth, and that could be linked to death and rebirth in nature, or, you know, decay and regeneration in the crops or things like that, or it could relate to some god that's known to be immortal, or a person, an individual who joins the immortal realm following physical death. So we see a pattern, and we see that this pattern actually preserves ancient beliefs, because when you think about it, everything that we communicate to each other, all our knowledge, is told in stories. So whatever religious belief system you may have, you have a mythology to go with it. You have a story that tells, you know, of key figures in that religion, and that's how we get to know them. For most people, when they're at school, you know, they learn about their religion through stories. And the Bible, of course, in the Christian Judeo Bible, is a collection of stories, and so are many other sacred texts. So I think once we clarify that, we understand what mythology really means. It's a collection or a body of information that is passed down and is woven into stories that keep the central perspective alive. And often they're metaphors. So, you know, a myth about the grain is a metaphor for death and rebirth again. We sow the grain, you know, the old grain dies, the new seed springs up. And so we see this same core pattern coming down the generations for thousands of years. And so that's myth, really. And archetypes are what we'd call kind of like energies that are indelibly stamped upon human beings. So if we take something like archetypal light and darkness, we have that image indelibly printed on our consciousness. So we understand the alternating patterns of light and darkness. And archetypes, you know, are often energies that represent things, like the ancient Egyptians and many other ancient cultures. You know, they believed at the moment of death, a transition guide, very much how we still believe now, but they believe a transition guide would take the person crossing over. And often that would be embodied in an animal figure, because animals were entrusted to be able to, you know, go between the visible and invisible realms. So we could talk about them as being archetypes. We have several archetypes that kind of most people do know about: the wise old man, the persona, the crone. You know, we have these kind of like, I guess, blueprints that people recognize as energies, but they're kind of like embodied in certain images. So maybe that would help you.
So archetypes are, you know, they're not inherited memories. They're I think you describe them as being alive and fluid. So they're energy.
They're not static memories.
Right.
They're alive and fluid, and they, you know, that they often appear in dreams. You know, people will often describe some kind of figure that fits into an archetypal pattern, meaning that particular energy is, you know, trying to convey something to the dreamer. And so
we recognize these. I'm sorry. We recognize these archetypes through the various symbols. I guess the trick is, how does one recognize these patterns and recognize these symbols, you know, and to give it
meaning?
Well,
I think the key thing with symbols is that we know when a symbol is alive and has meaning for us because it fills us with some kind of very strong emotional response. Like for some people, they could look at a crucifix, for example, and that symbol is alive to them. And just looking at what could appear to be just a piece of wood that is, you know, formed into that symbol suddenly becomes alive and expresses a whole lot more. And so I think rather than, you know, getting kind of too academic about it, it's simply really what symbols have meaning for you. You know, is it a chalice, a cross, a piece of moonstone jewelry, whatever it is that actually holds some meaning and seems to stir something up in you that recognizes whatever it is that symbol is carrying.
Mm. And of course, we get these insights and we see these symbols, and then we have our own challenge of interpreting them, you know, within the confines of our own orientation, you know, and I guess that's why, for instance, people that have near-death experiences, you know, they may see something and explain it in quite different ways, like in a religious figure, or an angel, or a spirit, or it's the interpretation is where we're limited by our physicality, I guess, you know.
Yeah, well, I think near-death experience are really, very difficult to describe because it's outside of human experience, really. And, you know, our language is very much settled into human experience. So to try articulating something out of the ordinary was incredibly difficult. And, that's why a lot of people would try to paint maybe their images from their experience or convey it in those kind of ways. But even then, you know, they'll say things like, well, the colors just weren't vivid enough. You can only experience it and then try and describe it. But I think it's actually the experience that carries the power rather than people's explanation. And, you know, one of the things about near-death experiences, too, is that, you know, they're flavored again by people's mythologies. So, you know, if you're a Christian, you may well see an image of Christ or an angel or, you know, a deceased family member. However, for somebody of a different religious orientation, you know, they may see the same type of figures, but according to their own belief system. So even though the sequence of a near-death experience is pretty much the same for everyone, although not every single component happens in each experience, you know, it is very different because, for example, Jung, you know, became very interested in Eastern religious traditions, and so, you know, he had experiences where he saw a yogi. That's how it translated for him, because that's, you know, where a great interest for him was in Eastern tradition. So we have to take all of those points into consideration, but when you look at all these stories, the core components of leaving the physical body, crossing some kind of a barrier, whether it's a bridge or a dark tunnel, coming into the light, perhaps being met by a religious figure, by a deceased family member or friend. I mean, people are met by animals, you know, pets they've had or particular animals that they have had a very strong relationship with. But the sequence is more or less the same. The life review, the coming into the light, a meeting with a being of light, all of those things remain unchanged. The either the prompting to come back to the body, or the choice to come back to the body, all of those things remain in this pattern and sequence. And you know, when I wrote Immortal Yearnings, really what I was trying to convey is that we do have a primordial affirmation of death and rebirth, or rather primordial affirmations, I should say, because we're surrounded by them. But we actually have to look and recognize them. And that we do, and that they do, if we look closely enough, and all of the stuff we've been talking about comes into that, if we do that, we see that our yearnings for immortality, which, you know, humanity, I would say most of humanity does have, can certainly be kind of not comforted, but, you know, we can actually see these affirmations around us all the time. And, of course, one of the most, one of the most kind of strong, striking affirmations is in a near-death experience or after-death communication or something like that. But we also, you know, experience these same affirmations all around us, especially in nature.
Yeah, you quoted several people in Immortal Yearnings, and one of them you quoted Charlie Tart, you know, who said that his research with these expanded states or altered states of consciousness suggested that the ultimate questions about the meaning of life and death can't be answered in ordinary consciousness. Do you sometimes think that When we all search for what our real purpose is in this physical life, do you think that it's possible that our purpose is simply to find ways of gaining access to these spiritual realms of existence?
Well, like you say, who can tell for sure? But
right.
Certainly, I think that you know, most of us have a curiosity for everything we've been talking about right now. And for a lot of people, there's a barrier to overcome, to investigate or to become curious, because, you know, it means we're acknowledging physical death. And for many people, that's obviously a very scary concept, you know. Western civilization does not embrace death and dying, certainly like many other cultures do. And so one has to really overcome that barrier. And I guess the interesting thing is, if you do overcome that barrier, and like you say, yes, you know, start an exploration and look upon life as a pilgrimage from A to B, and that B being spiritual realms of existence, then yes, I do think that, you know, that is our path, or certainly if we start walking that path, we start to feel a sense of being aligned with some natural progression. You know, not just that idea of, well, here we are, you know, get on with it, sort of eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. You know, that
right.
kind of looking. And I think, you know, the idea of practicing conscious living or conscious dying in a way requires that we, you know, let our old values, or perhaps traditional values, or our own fears, you know, die and become spiritually reborn on that path of seeking.
So, I mean, you would say, I'm sure that when we try to understand the nature of death or the nature of a spirit world, that there's there is value to examining all of the stories and the rituals of ancient times. I mean, they seem to know things that we're just learning now. Would you agree with
that? Well, I think so. Yes, yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason for that is because, you know, for example, when we look at the Egyptians as a culture, they believed the purpose of life was a preparation for the beyond. So they actually lived their life in accordance with that concept. And, you know, I think we have to remember that obviously that, for them, certainly regulated the way they lived. You know, they wanted to live in the best possible ways in order to reap the rewards. And when you look at most religions, you know, at heart, they actually are all saying the same thing. You know, if you want paradise, you need to start trying to create it here first so that you transition, you know, into another realm of an eternal realm. And so letting all of that go, which to a large extent, you know, Western civilization has done, means that we don't have that connection that ancient people felt.
Mm-hmm.
So we become, you know, very sterile in our thinking like that. And we see that a lot in the care of the dying, when rather than being at home whenever possible, you know, people are shipped off to sterile environments, and families can only manage to pop in very occasionally because they really, unfortunately, have lost the idea, I think, you know, we just have in our belief system that actually, you know, this is a privilege. It's a privilege to be with a person making their transition. Again, that opens up, you know, a whole new way of viewing certain things. And many people that decide to be fully present and, you know, accompany their loved one actually come to realize that they have feelings they would never have imagined during that, of, you know, of expansion, of repairing things in a relationship, of peace, of joy, of all the things that you certainly would not imagine may happen in that process. And obviously, I'm not saying that grief, because, you know, as human beings, we really mourn the people that are no longer around us physically in the day-to-day world. And that, you know, is a big part as well, and it's very painful, you know, and can be just the sensation of missing somebody. But at the same time, we do get these other insights too.
And we will continue after the break. We are talking with Dr. Anna Maria Hemingway. She's the author of Immortal Yearnings, Mystical Imaginings of Primordial Affirmations of the Afterlife. You can also learn more on Dr. Hemingway's website, which is annamariahemingway.com. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Anna Maria Hemingway. This show is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. We'd like to remind you that there are three ways to show us that you like Signs of Life Radio. The first is to go to Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us. Second, you can use the donate button on any one of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you don't like so much about the show. And three, remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you'll need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time that card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 1,000 online stores like Adobe, Drugstore.com, Marriott, Nordstrom's, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our annual fundraiser, Night of Mediums, set for April 12, 2013 at the Melville Marriott, with lots of certified mediums this year coming in from across the country to take part in this fundraiser. Early bird reservation pricing has gone out to our members only, and that will expire on February 28th. That is tonight, when sales go to regular pricing and open up to the general public. I just want to remind everybody, at this point, 75 seats are gone. There are only a few seats left. So if you're thinking about it, it might be time to act. So call your friends, and you may want to fill up a whole table. Also, our Grief Transformation Weekend is set for July 26th to 28th at the Guest House in Chester, Connecticut. There are only 50 spots at this intimate retreat escape with like-minded people seeking to maintain their relationships with those who have crossed over to the other side. You can watch for announcements if you're a member. If you are absolutely sure you want to be included in this, you can always send us an email, and we will put you on the first notification list. And those are my announcements for the evening. Bob, we go back to you.
And we're back with Dr. Anna Maria Hemingway. You know, one thing that fascinates me, and I learn more from reading your book, is, as you point out, ancient civilizations, you know, going back 4,000 years, I mean, the Greeks, the Aztecs, the Native Americans, I mean, the Hindus, Mayans, and so forth, I mean, they all incorporated these psychoactive plants to expand their consciousness. And, you know, considering that they're using what was provided in nature to reach these other realms, and I wondered, did they know something that we don't? I mean, is there value? I mean, did they somehow imprint this knowledge on our collective unconscious with the information they learned?
Well, I certainly think that that information is stored in the collective unconscious. Unfortunately, as you say, it's unconscious rather than conscious. We actually have to search around now to dig it up. But, yes, mind-altering or mind-expanding properties were used by most of these ancient cultures right the way through, from very diverse civilizations. And certainly, like you say, they were out in nature, and they were certainly part of ritual practices. Whether that was, you know, totally responsible for unveiling the information they had, or perhaps actually enhancing a connection that they'd already established, because they lived very close to the land. A lot of these people didn't have all these modern day. We live in cyberspace, whereas they actually lived on the land, and didn't have all the things that we occupy, our technological things we occupy ourselves with now. So a lot more time was actually spent, you know, being present with the earth. And I think rituals played a lot. Well, I know rituals played a large part of these cultures' activities. And, it was always, you know, this idea of transcending the mundane, if you like, and actually getting into this space where they felt they could connect with a higher source, a higher power.
Yeah.
And I think that taking various or ingesting or passing around the ceremonial goblet or chalice that may have had, you know, mind-expanding properties or however they did that in their own cultures, perhaps actually just enhanced rather than, you know, gave them just complete revelations. I think they already had this idea in their mind anyway, and they expanded them.
Mm. It always fascinated me how we're now discovering these paintings and depictions on these ancient cave walls and temples and caves and from different parts of the globe, and they were done at a time when there was obviously no transportation or internet, you know, to share ideas. So I guess one might reason that it's a result of a collective consciousness. You know, maybe, you know, archetypal information were imprinted in the minds of the people who drew them, and they were drawing them independently. I mean, is that a reasonable?
Well, I think so, because yeah. You know, some of these cave paintings definitely hint out of body experiences, or you know, moving into a different realm, as it were.
Yeah.
So, like you say, one of the fascinating things is that diverse cultures from all over the place that, again, you know, repeating what you said, didn't have the internet, weren't sending each other PDFs or pictures to look at,
right,
and, you know, perhaps didn't travel out of their own particular area very much, didn't post letters and receive, you know, information. I mean, obviously some people did travel around and brought back their information, but in general, it would appear that all these people were thinking and doing very much the same thing. So, yes, I think there was some collective imprint that they was very kind of up in their consciousness and remained so. And it's only gradually over time that this really has got relegated to, you know, unconsciousness. But one of the good things is that, you know, we do have stories of near-death experiences. We do have, you know, many cases of after-death communication that are veritable, in as much as we can suddenly see that they're what these ancient people believed in, we actually can still experience, and that it's still stored somewhere within us. And, you know, what's heartening to see is even sort of in as far as nature's concerned. I mean, nature is very disregarded and dishonored in the modern day world, but, you know, we are returning to things like Earth Day, which again really is repeating or kind of renewing the ancient respect for the Earth in their own, you know, celebrations and rituals. So there is a movement, I think, back, and I think the near-death experience itself, you know, has opened up a new way of thinking for a lot of people, you know, who may have given up religious belief systems. And then again, these modern day stories are wrapped in the old stories. They say the same thing, and they're making a very grand entrance into our consciousness.
And this may all be part of these immortal yearnings, maybe part of this paradigm shift that a lot of people are talking about now, this shift of consciousness and getting recognizing our eternal self. We have been, unfortunately, we are out of time. We've been talking with Dr. Anna Maria Hemingway. If you'd like to learn more about these mystical and affirmations of the afterlife and read about her other works, Practicing Conscious Living and Dying and Myths of the Afterlife, you can visit her on a website, which is annamariahemingway.com. That's A-N-N-A Maria Hemingway with one M.com. You can learn a lot more about her work. There are some links to her books on the Forever Family Foundation website. You could click on that and purchase it through Amazon. And Anna Maria, it's been a pleasure, and I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you'll join us again.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And yes, I'm always happy to talk about a subject that interests me that much. It's always inexhaustible, really.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it, and take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind as we visualize the healing light upon Andy O'Brien, Laura Lynn Jackson, Linda, Melissa Gould, Tanya Cash, Marianne Pierzga, Tracy Lee Nash, Flora Prisco, Stanley Mullen, Julie B., Glenna Irwin, Barbara Petillo, David Hayes, Rita Springer, Eileen LaPlata, Mark Varon, Wendy Lippos, Vicki Steffi, Nancy Shield, Barbara Russell, Tina Jocelyn, Deb Morton, Tim Donahue, Francis Mastracco. And now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.